Tales of History and Imagination. It's late on July 1st, 1694, and a young man rows silently along Hanover's Lean River. The handsome soldier and aristocrat is on a mission, aided only by moonlight. Now, I can't say for certain, as no one ever captured the specifics, but I imagine him doing his best to keep to the shadows as he floated by, bobbing and weaving to avoid detection from guards and onlookers alike. His heart aflutter, the young man reaches the Lehnschloss, the palatial home of the Duke of Hanover and his family. He moors his boat, then cautiously enters the property. This man is Philip Christoph, Count Königsmark. A German-born Swede from a long line of mercenaries, Königsmark was a fighter as much as he was a lover. His grandfather had served King Gustav Adolf II in the 30 Years' War, rising up to the ranks of field marshal. His father and uncle had also held high rank and saw active service. At one time, Philip himself had served another Holy Roman Emperor, Leopold I, in the fight against the Ottoman Empire. At this point in time, however, Philip was under the employ of the Elector of Saxony. He'd had no intention of being anywhere near Hanover tonight, but then a note arrived. He'd been summoned by his paramour, Sophia Dorothea, Princess of Sell, the terribly unhappy wife of Duke George Ludwig. On his arrival, one presumes Sophia was nonplussed. She never summoned the Count. All the same, and full disclosure, I am taking artistic license here. I imagine her ecstatic at his arrival. The couple hadn't seen each other for weeks, and there was so much to discuss about life in Saxony in the future. She must have been infuriated by that other woman's gall. "Well, clearly the bitch is still spying on us," I imagine her saying. "Never mind. In a day, this nightmare will be well behind us," the other may have replied. With rather less poetic license, you can imagine the rest of their night. They are two star-crossed lovers, after all. At some point, however, the Count bid the princess a fond adieu, and this would be the last time Princess Sophia Dorothea would ever see her lover. In the following hours, Count Königsmark would disappear from the face of the earth, never to be seen again. Now, to explain the preceding scene, we need to go back a ways and meet the rest of the cast. First, we should say a thing or two about the location. The region we're in falls in the borders of modern Germany, although Germany wouldn't come to be until January 1871, when 25 various small kingdoms, grand duchies, states and republics, all came together under one banner. Most of these independent nations formed out of the ashes of the Napoleonic Wars. Prior to that, the time we're currently in, Germany was a vast patchwork of states, overseen by the Holy Roman Emperor. Between 1346 and the destruction of the Holy Roman Empire in 1806, some states were more important than others. The title Holy Roman Emperor was bestowed by vote, the empire being an elective monarchy. For most of the history of the empire, only 7 states were electors, the people who voted. There was some excitement in 1623 when the Count Palatinate of the Rhine lost voting privileges over the Bohemian Revolt, the incident that started the 30 Years' War. The House of Wittelbach's loss was the Duke of Bavaria's gain. In our time, there were rumblings Hanover were due to become the 8th Elector State for their exemplary service in the 30 Years' War. But only if they did nothing stupid to ruin their chances. Now, it also bears mention, in 1694, a combined Hanover itself was a very new state. In the 1260s, the area was split into 2 duchies. Let's call them Brunswick-Sell and Brunswick-Lüneburg, their recent names. They were originally split to accommodate two feuding brothers, who both wished to be duke. The two Brunswicks in our time were also ruled over by two brothers, Duke George Wilhelm of Brunswick-Celle and Duke Ernst August of Brunswick-Lüneburg. If rancor split the duchy in the first place, in a weird way it was love and marriage that brought Hanover back together. George Wilhelm was engaged to a princess from the neighbouring duchy of Rhineland-Palatinate. She was another Princess Sophia. But George didn't love her, and was far from ready to give up his bachelor lifestyle. George made the unusual move in a world of arranged marriages, of cancelling their engagement. Several leading figures in the duchy were furious over this, but were placated when George promised he would never marry. His brother Ernst would marry Sophia, and would go down the usual aristocratic path of having heirs. What's more, when George passed, his duchy would either pass to his brother or his brother's heir, reuniting the lands. George signed legal agreements stating as much, and everything was fine, until George fell in love with his mistress, a beautiful French woman named Eleanor de Oblerus, in 1665. The couple entered into a morganatic marriage and had a daughter together, our princess, Sophia Dorothea. The leading figures in the duchies were again furious, seeing the marriage as a betrayal, and things got even more complicated when George approached Holy Roman Emperor Leopold I, asking for permission to officially marry Eleanor. Leopold gave his blessing many years after the fact. Sophia Dorothea was 10 years old when permission was finally granted, but there was a caveat to Leopold's blessing. George had a daughter. Ernest and Sophia now had a son named George Ludwig. The two cousins would marry, ensuring the duchies united. This suited everyone, but the two cousins, who detested one another. Regardless, the couple wed on 21st November 1682. Now, one other quick twist in the tale. It was perfectly permissible at the time for the men to openly have affairs with other women. While married to Sophia Dorothea, George Ludwig had affairs with other women, as did his father, Ernst. Ernst's mistress is a person to know in this tale. Her name, Countess Clara von Platen. Now we'll come back to this lot in a second, but first let's introduce Count Königsmark. He has quite the backstory. Philip Christoph von Königsmark's family originated from the city of Brandenburg, although of recent generations they had been in the service of the Swedish royal family. His grandfather, Count Hans Christoph von Königsmark, was the field marshal who led Sweden's legendary Flying Column in the capture of Prague Castle in 1648. Essentially, he won the final battle of the Thirty Years' War at the place where the war started. In his mid-teens, Philip and his brother Karl were sent to England. They were bundled off to learn gentlemanly ways at the court of Charles II. But both brothers soon learned other gentlemanly ways. Both young men soon found themselves in trouble. Philip discovered the gambling tables and lost huge sums of money. Karl Königsmark's trouble was on a whole different level. While at court, Karl became smitten with Elizabeth Seymour, the Duchess of Somerset. Elizabeth was caught in a loveless, arranged marriage to a wealthy cheating husband, the wealthy landowner and Member of Parliament Thomas Finn. Now, affairs are one thing, but on 12th of February 1682, Finn was travelling through Pall Mall in a carriage when three armed men, Christopher Vratz, John Stern, and George Borowski, gunned him down. The assassins were quickly captured, and they flipped on Karl Königsmark, who'd hired them to murder Finn. The three assassins were hanged for the deed. Karl was let out on bail. The Königsmark brothers, now outcasts, and worried one of Finn's relatives might take a hit out on them, very quickly legged it to Europe. Once back on the mainland, they both enrolled in Emperor Leopold's army. It was around this time that 15-year-old Philip first met 16-year-old Sophia Dorothea in Hanover. The teens were smitten with one another, but alas, she was due to marry her blockhead cousin, and he was about to be sent off to war. Philip's brother Karl was killed in action in 1686, fighting the Turks in Greece. And as I've nowhere else to shoehorn this in, not long after Thomas Finn's murder, an anonymously written poem circulated throughout London. Here lies Tom Finn of Longleat Hall, who ne'er would have miscarried, had he married the woman he slept with all, or slept with the woman he married. But anyway, moving on. In 1688, after 8 years' service in the wars against the Ottomans, Philip Königsmark returned to the Hanoverian court. Many ladies at court swooned for the dashing young soldier. Initially, he became a close friend and confidant of Sophia Dorothea, a sympathetic ear who could keep confidential her tales of her horrid husband, diabolical in-laws, and her stepfather's terrifying mistress, the Countess Platon. Philip may have been a good listener, but he clearly lacked common sense, as he too was soon wooed by and engaged in an ill-advised affair with Clara von Platon. But the Count soon realized he felt more than friendship towards the princess. He'd also come to the conclusion fairly quickly Countess Platon was a dangerous lunatic one should avoid at all costs. Stuck between a rock and a hard place, he took up a new military commission and left Hanover, hoping the Countess would forget all about him. Did he hope to forget about Sophia Dorothea? In both cases, he was terribly unsuccessful. On his return to court in the spring of 1690, the Count began his wooing of the princess, and by 1692 they were undeniably having an affair. Countess Platon, meanwhile, resumed her wooing of the Count. The Countess's advances were unreciprocated, so she hired spies to follow Königsmark. The spies discovered the royal affair. Very soon the Countess was intercepting all of their love letters. By 1693, the couple were well aware of this, as the Countess could no longer be bothered repairing the broken seals on the letters. Philip resumed his affair with Countess Platon, hoping this would buy her silence. But before long, the pressure of all these dangerous liaisons got too much for the lovers. In January 1694, Princess Sophia Dorothea visited her parents, asking if she could abandon her marriage. Her parents sent her back to the Lienschloss. Count Königsmark and Princess Sophia Dorothea decided they had no option but to run away together. But first, their biggest hurdle was money. Philip was a gambler who was lousy with money. Princess Sophia had ceded everything she had to her husband on their wedding day. In May 1694, Philip took a commission as a major general with the Elector of Saxony's cavalry in Dresden. Sophia sat tight and waited for Philip to accrue some money. On 1st July, at the urging of the counterfeit letter, Philip returned to Hanover. Whether he suspected a trap or not, it must have seemed a safe time to drop in. Most of the court were away at their summer houses, George Ludwig included. We know Count Königsmark arrived at the Lienschloss, although it is only speculated he met with the princess that night. If he did get to her, at some point he went out. We do know the princess was up all night with her lady-in-waiting, packing her belongings for the following day's elopement. The following day, Count Königsmark was nowhere to be found. A distraught princess was severely limited in what she could ask. She certainly couldn't go out searching for a lover. For a time, a rumour circulated around the courts about the two, but both vociferously denied the rumour, putting it to bed. Even asking questions about the Count could stoke their fire. Eventually, the scuttlebutt from the markets reached the princess. Allegedly, the witches of Dresden had lured Philip away. But what really happened? The disappearance of the Count is usually played up as some big mystery. Now, I don't believe there is anything terribly mysterious about his disappearance. Far more likely than not, four cavaliers got into a fight with Count Königsmark, and the Count was stabbed to death. It is presumed Countess Platen had set the trap with a letter to the Count, and this was very much her modus operandi. One presumes Count Königsmark's journey along the Lien did not go unnoticed, and either the Countess or one of her spies caught sight of the couple. That night, Clara van Platen rushed to her lover, Duke Ernst. She spilled the beans on the affair and planned elopement. It is a matter of public record Duke Ernst sent four cavaliers out to arrest Count Königsmark. Many years after the fact, two of those men gave evidence. They caught up with the Count outside of the Lienschloss, but the Count drew his sword on them. Seasoned warrior or not, the cavaliers got the better of him, stabbing him to death. Neither man gave away the location of the body. The most common theory claimed his body was simply weighed down with rocks and thrown into the Lien River, but others have suggested his corpse was immolated or buried somewhere on the castle grounds. In 2016, there was much excitement when bones were dug up at the Lienschloss. Newspapers around the world wondered if the Count had finally been found. But DNA testing showed the bones belonged to five separate men, none of whom were the Count. Was the killing an accident? Probably not. The man believed to have dealt the killing blow, Don Niccolo Montalbano, was suddenly rich, having been gifted 150,000 talers. By way of comparison, this was equivalent to 100 years' wages for the highest paid civil servant in the land. It was equivalent to 750 years of wages for Montalbano. Duke Ernst did send these men out, but it doesn't automatically stand that he gave the order to kill. It could have just as easily come from George Ludwig or Countess Platen. Had the lovers disappeared, George would have been seen as a cuckold in the eyes of the people. In spite of their marriage being mutually loveless and his own dalliances, could he have bore this indignity? Alternately, had the wealthy Countess given the order, this may have been a case of hell hath no fury after all. Personally, I've always been a tiny bit suspicious of the claim George gave the order. The affair was eventually uncovered, though Princess Sophia Dorothea denied it till her dying day. But the couple didn't divorce until December 1694, after which George exiled Sophia Dorothea to house arrest at nearby Alden Castle. The princess remained a prisoner there till she passed on 32 years later. Was George aware of the rumours? Well, probably. Did he have the patience to wait 6 months before he imprisoned the princess? Now back to the Countess for a second. Besides the two lovers, she was still married to a man named Count Franz von Platen-Hellemund. One presumes in this time the Countess would have struggled to gather such a large sum of money for the killer without tipping off her husband. Of the three, Ernst August seems the most likely to have given the order. They were on the verge of becoming an elector state, after all. Would a royal scandal have jeopardized that opportunity? Now, of course, at the end of the day, the murky tale did out, in no small part because George Ludwig became something of a big shot in just a few years' time. You see, Sophia the Elder, George's mother, was something of a big deal herself. Her grandfather had been King James I of England. Their dynasty was briefly interrupted when her uncle, Charles I, was deposed and then beheaded by Oliver Cromwell. But then her nephew, Charles II, was returned to the throne in 1660. In 1685, Charles II died, leaving 14 illegitimate children, but no heirs. This led to the crown being passed to Charles's brother, James II. Both Charles II and James II were in an awkward position in regards to their religious affiliations. Charles had secretly converted to Catholicism as part of an agreement with the French crown. Charles needed the money. France needed a Catholic ally. They always expected Charles to announce his conversion, which he only ever did in his final months. James II also converted to Catholicism in 1669, and his conversion was a nuisance, but not seen as a huge impediment, at least as long as his heirs presumptive were his Protestant daughters from his first marriage. There were occasional clashes and incidents between James and Parliament, but nothing that serious. But then James remarried to a Catholic Italian princess named Mary of Modena. In 1688, she gave birth to a son, their new heir apparent, James. This ensured the dynasty would go Catholic on James's eventual succession. This prompted the Glorious Rebellion of 1688. In November, the entire Dutch navy sailed down the River Thames and carried out a palace coup with significant aristocratic backing. But in the shorter term, it ushered in a period of joint rule by James II's daughter Mary and her husband, the Dutch William of Orange. But then the line of succession got very murky. By 1702, William and Mary had passed on, having never had children. The crown passed to Mary's sister, Anne. Historically, there have been all kinds of rumours around Anne, whether she was gay or bisexual. And whether she was or not, she still fell pregnant 18 times in service of the nation. She suffered 6 miscarriages, 5 stillbirths, and none of her remaining children lived beyond the age of 2. Now, because Parliament passed the Act of Settlement in 1701, banning Catholics from the crown, and because Anne had no living children, for most of Anne's reign, George's mother Sophia was the heir presumptive. Now, this was in spite of her being somewhere in the order of 24th in line, were it not for the ban on Catholics. She never got to become queen, however, as she died before Anne. Duke George Ludwig, a weird guy from a small German duchy, with an ex-wife locked in his tower, ascended to the throne following Anne's death on August 1, 1714. He skipped nearly 60 higher-ranked but Catholic suitors for the crown. As George I of Britain, he established the House of Hanover, ruling until his death in 1727. George's bloodline carries on. The current king, at the time of recording this at least, Charles III, is directly related to George through both sides of his family. Thank you for listening. This has been Tales of History and Imagination. All episodes written and narrated by me, Simone Whitlow. All music, yours truly. Visit the show at historyandimagination.com. You can follow me on social media, links in the show notes, and get access to exclusive bonus content via my Patreon, also in the notes. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a like on your podcatcher of choice and share the episode, as word of mouth is the best way to help shows like this grow. See you back in 2 weeks' time for more tales of history and imagination.